Welcome to Tech It to the Limit, the humorous and surprisingly informative podcast that makes digital innovation in healthcare as entertaining as it is relevant. I'm Sarah Harper.
And I'm Elliot Wilson. And we're here to pull back the curtain on the world of digital transformation in healthcare.
Don't worry, you don't need a medical degree to join in on the fun. Just a sense of humor and a penchant for all things health tech.
So buckle up, folks. It's time to
Tech It to the Limit.
Welcome back to Tech It to the Limit, bonus episode 2.0 for season 3. Tech It to the Limit, you know you can refill your RX for LOL here, the home of low latency learning in the world of digital health. I'm Sarah Harper, your friendly neighborhood interoperability enthusiast.
And I'm Elliot Wilson, still shaking the health glitter out of my badge lanyard and my soul.
Ooh, that sounds dirty. So if you missed part one, a bonus episode, season 3, go back and catch it. Elliot sat down with Dr. Lynn Nowak and John Beadle of Epigenetics Ventures. Today, we're picking up the baton where we left it on the track with two more conversations from health. Actually, three. There's the future of agentic AI with Assort Health, the future of ambient innovation with Vertex Health, and artificial intelligence for diagnostics with Optane Health. That was a tricky one to say, folks. So basically, as always, keep your ears and eyes open. And I think it's my turn to stop talking now.
Yeah. No, so spoiler alert, all three interviews involved technology more invisible and care more human.
We can get behind that. Machines make care
hashtag
more human. Is that what you say?
Hashtag more human.
Okay. So let's start with John Wang, CEO of Assort Health. He's the one pioneering this whole idea of agentic AI, right? It's more than just a chat bot with good manners. So tell us about it, Elliot.
Yeah, it's like ChatGPT with like a driver's license. So it's
ooh, sounds safe.
It acts, it takes action, it does things, it schedules, it reschedules, it confirms appointments, it has a lovely conversation with patients and interacts directly with the EHR.
It sounds like it's not just AI inform, it's AI get it done.
Get it done.
Get her done.
Here's what I took away from.
Yeah, tell us your takeaways. Thanks.
It was such a fascinating conversation that I had with him. So number one, agentic AI is able to execute tests. It can safely do that. We're maybe not ready for it in clinical context yet, but you know, certainly in the context of the patient experience, which is where Assort Health comes in, it is clearly making waves here. Second, it's freeing the frontline staff from having to do repetitive administrative work so that humans can be focusing on things like, I don't know, humanity and empathy. So I think that's pretty cool. Third, they got a ton of experience under their belt. They've logged over 15 million patient interactions with like near human satisfaction scores. Like they've got fantastic
validation data.
Yeah, it's really incredible. All right. And then fourth, and this was the paradox that John kind of talks about. When people find out it's AI, their trust drops. We call it the trust gap, right? But I mean, you have to disclose that you're an AI talking to the
sure
patient, right?
For now.
Right? But when they didn't know, they were like all in. And so it's all about messaging and communication. Mm. So that leads into the last point. Like, it's not about making more capable AI, but how credible is your AI?
Ooh, I love this. So it's like you're on a first date with the AI and it just comes out with its whole like baggage and history. Like here, this is me. It's my moment of vulnerability. Take it or leave it. Do you want to date me? And then you can decide whether or not you're going to use it. Trust it, right?
Make that decision for yourself. Yeah.
Love it. Such an important discussion and such an important distinction, capability versus credibility. Awesome. Listeners, here, let's bring you the full interview between Elliot and John Wang of Assort Health.
Roll it.
This episode of Tech It to the Limit is brought to you by Hippopotamus, the only AI-powered compliance companion that actually understands what HIPAA stands for. Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. Not, hey, I posted a patient's appendectomy. Hippopotamus sniffs out PHI leaks faster than your toddler finds your unlocked iPhone. Using advanced sentiment sniffing and snout-based surveillance, it alerts you before you accidentally upload your patient's colonoscopy footage to TikTok.
It even syncs with Outlook to auto-delete oops emails like, here's that lab result we weren't supposed to share. Available in three moods: compliant, passive-aggressive, and full audit mode. So whether you're a health system exec, an over-caffeinated nurse, or a boomer doc still faxing from a Palm Pilot, Hippopotamus has your backside fully covered. Hippopotamus, because privacy is a zoo out there. Head to hippopotamus.biz, that's .biz, because .gov said it's not you, it's bureaucracy, and enter promo code TITTL, or TITTLE, for no savings whatsoever, and a free ringtone of your compliance officer sighing.
Hey, Tech It to the Limit listeners. I am back here at the health conference. And with me this time, we have John Wang, the CEO and co-founder of Assort Health, the company turning hold music into history with a Series B led by Lightspeed Venture Partners and with a little star power maybe from Olympic gold medalist Paulo Ono. John is redefining how patients connect with healthcare using agentic AI voice agents that actually do something while you're on hold. He's a Stanford-trained engineer and repeat founder. John spent his career bridging human conversation and machine intelligence, first in natural language research and now in real-world patient access. And under his leadership, Assort is scaling faster than your call queue on a Monday morning, transforming how health systems schedule, verify, and triage patient calls with empathy, accuracy, and zero elevator music. So say goodbye to your call is important to us, and hello to the future of patient experience. So welcome, John Wang. Can I call you John?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for being here with Tech It to the Limit. Before we jump into it, tell us about Assort, what you do, and how you got into it.
Sweet. Yeah, happy to share that. So yeah, I grew up in Minnesota. My dad's a doctor, mom's an esthetician, so I've always been really excited about healthcare and technology, how it can help improve patient experiences. Former founder of the Behavioral Health Services Company, but before that, following my dad in his footsteps, being a good Asian kid too, was a medical student at UCSF, doing research in AI and healthcare, publishing research, building AI bots, to answer the medical licensing exam at the time, like the chair of medicine at Stanford. And for me, there's this moment in medical school where I was clinic, ENT clinic one day, and this 74-year-old elderly woman was screaming at the front desk because she could not get through the phones, had spent over 45 minutes on hold and had to drive in and still couldn't get an appointment that day.
I feel like we've all been there, right?
I know. For us, like, really passionate about our mission as a company, which is to make exceptional healthcare accessible anytime, anywhere, for anyone. And Assort Health, with co-founder Jeff, in 2023, we launched the first agentic AI that could fully schedule an appointment using complex specialty logic end-to-end into the EHR with no human in the loop. Today, we've handled roughly around 50 million patient interactions. Really proud to have served thousands of providers who've believed in us and trusted us to kind of deploy these AI agents. And yeah, like you said, we raised over $100 million.
It's incredible.
Accelerating.
4 months, Series B, 4 months after closing Series A. Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah, we're really
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
So, John, so you're going from like chatbots to co-pilots. Now we're at full-blown agents. Can you kind of help our listeners understand what makes an agentic AI different and why is healthcare finally at a point where we're ready for this?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, and I think healthcare being ready is an interesting question. I'd love to dive into it because I'm actually sometimes, there's certain parts of that, like patient trust and stuff I'd love to dive into. But I think for agentic, the definition of agentic versus like generative. So in the past, LMs, you know, those are generative AI tools. It's an LM is an algorithm, you know, based off transformers.
Sure.
Just being able to create things like ChatGPT, OpenAI, Gemini. And what agentic is now the ability for these algorithms to actually act and complete actions end to end using tools like, for example, email, whatever, EHR integrations, things like that, and actually act on behalf of
a person.
Of a person, like, essentially.
Doing the job of a person. Ooh, it's a little bit of a touchy subject there sometimes. Well, very cool. So how do you adapt your agent for the unique workflows or language, dialect differences, cultural nuances between specialties? And so what did you learn from the first specialty that sort of surprised you or you had to relearn as you moved to the next specialty?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one thing that's unique about healthcare in general is that there's a ton of admin spend, and specifically in patient access, which is what we really focus on. Scheduling is a very complex. So if you go into what some of these groups that we work with, they literally have folders full of spreadsheets and binders full of different rules that you have to follow to schedule an appointment appropriately. And there's two reasons why these exist. One of them is because basically providers are very, for good reason, particular about what types of patients they should be seeing. And two, insurance companies are also making sure that patients are being seen at the right cadences and things like that. And I'll give you an example. If you're going to get cortisone injection in your knee, if you're like knee pain, there'll be a specific global period window, 73 days for BCVS, 85 days for Cigna, in which you must wait until you can get your next injection. And you want to make sure you're seeing that with the right type of physician. And if you've seen that physician before, oftentimes the PA is the appropriate person to do that type of care, level of care, right? So these really complex, nuanced, specialty things.
I mean, that's a very straightforward example, right? Where the only challenge is necessarily time, right? But then you got to think about things like infusion or procedural activities where there's, you may have PAT that has to be done, right? And all of those different rules that go into place in order to schedule, it makes it very complex.
It's very complex. And like voice AI and LLMs, they've actually been around for a few years now, but very few companies have been able to develop the actual technology to handle these edge cases, is what we call. So we've handled now around 1.2 million different edge cases, 50 million patient interactions. We have a database. We call it part of our SOAR intelligence, where we come into a practice, we ingest the EHR data, we ingest their, you know, scheduling SOPs, all that information, call recordings, and we automatically generate based off the, all the other workflows we've built in the past, their specific specialty tunes, organization specific.
So specialized to the clinic, specialized to the specialty, so that it becomes a very personalized delivery that you're bringing to the clinic.
And the whole thing is like, hey, like healthcare for a long time, you know, like for example, EHRs, practices and providers and health systems, they've been forced to conform to the technology and the code, right? But now, because code gen is actually, like, for example, our engineers, top 1% of engineers in terms of code gen on leaderboards. Because of that, we have the opportunity, which is different now, to build code and engineering that's extremely hyper-specific to health systems and their specific nuances, how they want to provide care, right? So that's one thing that we're really excited about with the shifts in technology where, hey, now one engineer, if they can do 10x the output, why are we trying to build specific workflow that you have to conform to? Why not make it such that that provider can get the perfect visit note that they want before the patient comes in and exactly the format they
need?
So that's kind of
scaling customization. That's very cool. So I want to switch gears here and think about the patients that you're serving. How do you build cultural competence into your voice agent? So for patients that might have limited English proficiency or varying dialects or speech patterns or accessibility, how do you build that into your product from the beginning? And have you seen any measurable improvements or maybe even gaps in access for underserved populations?
That's a really great question. I think there's two components to that. The first one is like, hey, if we ever can't help someone, we want them to actually go to a human, and that detection algorithm is very important and critical. So we've invested a lot into that resource. We're like, hey, anytime we basically have like an eval internally that helps flag all conversations where it seems like there was some sort of challenge in terms of getting the patient what they wanted. And we're constantly, we basically have a team that looks at all of those and then understands what new training or tweaks we should put into the model so that the next time that happens. And that's why having so many millions of interactions at this point is actually really essential to find the best possible patient experience.
Sure.
And we also measure very, so every time someone uses our product at the end of the call, we'll ask a scale of 1 to 5 when we rate our products. So we're always measuring that. On average, 4.6 out of 5 stars. But
that's pretty good. So that was another question that was I was thinking about, right, is when we think about trust and AI and how it gets delivered into the healthcare system, the transparency of it all is very important. And so do patients know right off the bat? I mean, do you inform them that, hey, you're speaking to an agent right now?
So the answer is yes. And
he says with a little bit of a smile.
We've thought a lot about this problem, and it's really interesting because AI is at the point where now it can actually provide better care service than a human. But humans don't trust it. Patients don't trust. And we have to kind of bridge that gap. And one way that we measure that actually is, so there's a study that came out around JAMA. It's around clinicians using AI to send messages, essentially. And when a clinician uses AI to send a message and exposes it to use AI, patients rate that message very poorly. But when they use AI, they don't say they use AI, they might rate it higher than...
Than they would if it was a human.
Yeah, just a human.
That's fascinating.
So, and similarly for us, even though our AI is rated higher than the average human interaction, 30, 40% of the time, as soon as they hear, hey, this is an AI agent, they go straight to a...
And want to talk to a human.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so we're starting to kind of bridge this gap of like, hey, we have the technology that can actually help improve that patient experience. But how do we just get them to try it out?
That is really, really interesting. So I want to think about it now from the provider's perspective.
Yeah.
On the ground, like how are staff roles changing in the clinics when you have agents taking over a lot of those inbound calls? So what happens to these people? I mean, are there training, monitoring, or feedback loops, or are they redeployed elsewhere? How do you preserve, how do you preserve quality and human oversight within the clinic?
Yep. It's a great question. So I think within like patient access, there are like three core problems that kind of leads me to answering this question. One of them is that like there's shrinking margins, right? Reimbursements are basically reducing, costs are increasing. Mm-hmm. Second core problem is that these folks are overwhelmed because of that. They have to answer way too many calls, mm-hmm. and that causes mistakes, burnout. The third component is that there's a huge shortage of healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. Most groups that we're looking for are trying to hire more folks, but no one wants...
Yeah, they can't find them.
It's really hard to find people to do this job, where it's mm-hmm. like every day I'm just on the phone, 150 calls a day, right? And there's no breaks, right? So what we've seen is that once our AI tools comes in, it lifts these folks away from the mundane type of tasks. Mm-hmm. We've actually built tools for them to do their job in a more humane way. So what we do now, for example, is that we have collaboration tools for AI and humans. So humans now can use our tools to help understand where this patient should go, mm-hmm. rather than having to memorize a binder full of rules. Mm-hmm. And then we also have tools where if the AI sends it to a human, there's some pre-work done. And so when you think about it, like now the human can actually focus on that call. So if a patient's struggling, I can actually empathize with the patient, help them get what they need, rather than digging through an EHR, reading through every single visit note, mm-hmm. reading through a binder, while trying to help someone who's struggling and trying to get care, right? So bringing humanness back into that interaction, which for a long time, when you talk to these call center operators, it's a really hard job. Mm-hmm. You're not in a good headset when you call them.
Yeah, we have a hashtag at Tech Into the Limit. It's hashtag machines make care more human.
Oh, wow.
And
that's like, interesting. Right? That's an interesting hashtag.
And like, that's what it should be. That's what it should be. Technology should make care more human.
And healthcare, it's a human thing, right?
Right.
It's like,
and it's very intimate. You know, people are often calling and engaging in healthcare at their most vulnerable states.
Yes. Right?
And we should acknowledge that and respect that and honor that through the work that we do in our technology. We're Definitely. Very passionate about that here on our podcast.
Yeah. And people should be spending more time with their doctors rather than spending time on hold.
That's I mean, and that's what it is for you, right?
Yeah.
So last question, right? So how does a clinic know that they've been successful when they're evaluating their solution? What are the typical KPIs that you're asking them to track before and after to prove out what you've brought to the table?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I'd say there's three core things. It's like performance, safety, and then third one is
satisfaction
of patients. So patient satisfaction scores, we'll do surveys. We also do external surveys like mm-hmm. social plan occasionally. Patient safety, pretty straightforward. We like basically flag any urgent case and do we actually escalate them appropriately?
Right.
And the third one, which is performance, for us, that what that ends up being is like how much capacity did we increase for your group, right?
Mm-hmm.
So two components, one's capacity, one's revenue generation, right? Or how much more access are we getting for your clinic? Mm-hmm. So from a capacity, it's like, hey, like usually we're handling 40-50% of your calls.
Mm-hmm.
So that's increasing the capacity for your group. And the second component is around appointment access, because now we're online 24/7, 29 different languages. We can outbound patients if they miss their appointment to get them their next appointment, find other patients to fill slots,
mm-hmm.
things like
that. And so you're obviously looking at schedule utilization as part of that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Appointment utilization, just getting more patients access to care, honestly. Yeah. Make it easier for them to get it so they don't go to someone else as well. Yeah.
So I know I already said last question, but now is my real last question. So you're a multi-founder, obviously very successful in what you're bringing to the industry. What advice would you have and what call to action would you have for our listeners and for potential founders out there, given your experience?
Founders specifically?
Yeah, sure.
I'd say I think being a founder in the early stages, it's probably one of the hardest moments. I think it's still hard as you scale, but like, I would just say, I respect what you're doing. You're hustling out there. Like, you know, you're eating the glass. You are doing the hardest thing every day. So keep up what you're doing. Like,
don't give up.
Don't give up. Pivot if you need to.
Pivot if you but, you're not giving up. You're pivoting.
Yes. But yeah, just know that like it compounds, right? Like I think I learned a ton in my first, probably like, and I'm still learning so much. And, you know, in the future, you know, 20 years, if I start another company, I'm going to learn even more.
Sure.
It's like this compounding thing where like, just keep at it, keep hustling. It's a matter of time. If you're humble, you learn, you iterate, you evolve, you will get there over time.
That's awesome. Great advice. Hey, John, thank you so much for being with us on Tech to the Limit. This was a fascinating conversation. Congratulations on your Series B.
Thank you.
Wishing you the best luck and enjoy the rest of the health conference.
Yes. Great to meet you, Elliot.
And we'll see you next time on Tech to the Limit.
Well, that was fascinating. I was taking notes faster than ChatGPT generates them. Next up, Elliot, you talked to Dr. Adam Glassofer, founder of Vertex Health. I love his take on tech that disappears so clinicians can reappear.
Yeah. So Adam and I go way, way, way back. He's a really good friend of mine. He's done some incredible things with his time globally, leading AWS's programs for health startups. He's an ED physician. He's gotten just an incredible tech mind. He's got an incredible clinical mind. He's like a super young Gen X. So he's kind of cool.
Not too bitter.
No, and he's just super humble and chill and very funny and just an all-around really good guy. So
give us the highlight reel.
The way he builds innovation ecosystems is really cool. He does a lot of work in that space. And so he calls ambient the future of healthcare. That's what he gets excited about. And I can't say I disagree with him on it. He's worked with a lot of founders. So here's some of the things that you might want to be listening for when you're hearing this conversation. So, hey, founders, start with outcomes, not buzzwords. Everybody's heard it. Bring your validation to the table. Second, because along with that, innovation doesn't mean anything unless it's measurable, but also sustainable.
Yes. Amen.
And he mentions that the best tech is invisible. It just goes to work and gets out of the way, right? You know, we don't see it.
Mm-hmm, like my robot vacuum.
Yeah. Take a listen to his comments around working with nonprofits and health systems to build a sustainable innovation pipeline. Some really good nuggets in there. He said something that honestly, I can't remember this actually happening or if this is a ChatGPT hallucination upon reviewing our transcript, but but this is actually really poignant, and the point is made at least that when technology stops demanding attention, then care can finally get it.
Ooh, I love that.
Right?
All right. Good job, AI version of Dr. Adam Glassofer.
Yeah.
Very poetic guy, you know, this dude that may or may not be real. Let's hear it straight from the source this time, though. No more transcripts. Here's Elliot's conversation with Dr. Glassofer.
Hey, Tech to the Limit listeners. It's Elliot. I'm here at Health in the podcast booth with a very special guest, my very good friend, longtime virtual care companion. I feel like it's like, and with me as always is Garth,
my care companion,
Dr. Adam Glassofer, who Adam and I used to work way back in the day at a health system we were just talking about pushing Sisyphusian boulders up hills, trying to bring out new virtual care programs. So, so glad to have you on, Adam. Why don't you tell our listeners like who you are, what you do, and why you're here?
I am a pediatric hospitalist by trade, although you're a grown man. I've been his care companion and provider at times. So pediatric hospitalist by trade, spent most of my career in a health system with you, which makes this much easier. And over time, ended up as associate CMIO and chief innovation officer, launched a wildly successful telehealth program with a very young go-getter named Delia Wilson.
What? That guy.
And built out a center for innovation, led large-scale rollouts, you know, and then ended up leaving and going to Amazon, which was very kind of weird path.
It was a very different thing than a community health network in Southern New Jersey.
Very different thing. So I spent 3+ years at AWS where I was the global head of healthcare startups for public sector venture capital.
Wow, that is a mouthful, but you went global.
Yes. And so in the setting that my team owned and ran this AWS Healthcare Accelerator, it was great helping companies build, scale, and grow. That job was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Until it wasn't. And then about 2 years ago, started my own consulting advisory.
What's the name of the firm?
Vertex Health. I work with a wide variety of clients. A lot of what I do is build large scale innovation programs or like build ecosystems for either government enterprises, nonprofits.
That's fascinating work, right? So like, tell me about one of those sort of programs that you've built now that you're out of AWS, doing your own thing, if you can. Share what you've done.
Well, a great example is, so one of the reasons I'm here supporting is ACS, American Cancer Society Bright Edge. So it's the venture innovation arm of American Cancer Society. Great mission, great team. And they wanted to put together, they had a life science program and wanted to put together a digital health program. So came in and helped them out, got them partnered up with Scale Health,
which is,
you know, really expert at delivering programs like that. And now it's up and running. The first cohort is finishing. They're launching a new program. They consolidated their innovation. So I love doing stuff like that. I would say from ideation or inception, or even from scale, or both.
Okay.
But like to work with, and this is one of the Amazon ethos things that I do try to keep with me is, you know, really starting with the outcomes and what customer client wants. So like if you're built, that's great. You want to do innovation, right? Like, what does that mean?
Right. It's about, it has about as much meaning as AI.
Yeah.
we want to innovate.
Well, actually, we want to be innovative in AI.
And we also want to do a lot of interoperability.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I'll pepper in some PBM stuff and value-based care. All right. So in the setting of that, it's all about working back, and it's from what are the mission objectives they want to achieve?
Right.
And then designing a program
that leads to that.
Correct. Right.
You know, correct. And brings in the talent, brings in the dollars, brings in the tech that's going to help them achieve that. Right.
Yes.
You know, yeah. So it's you're setting up your funnel appropriately.
And for them specifically, you know, they're also an investor. So how can they build a program that aligns with their investment thesis, and they get to really know these companies through the course of the program and then determine, do they want to make further investment?
I think investment thesis is like a really good band name for like a health tech band.
I'm sure it's out there.
Yeah. Investment thesis. We are investment thesis and we came here to rock.
Yeah. San Dimas, California.
So the American Cancer Society, they brought you in to do this. You said the first cohort is coming out now?
First cohort is just finishing up in their digital health program. Their life science program is actually just wrapped their second cohort and they're both relaunching. So applications are actually open now.
And so is that an accelerator program or is it like an investment evaluation kind of program?
No, I would say it's an accelerator. It's about pulling in the right contacts that can be helpful. Yes, making some investment, but also providing tools, networking, connections, access that are going to help these companies.
And money.
Scale and grow. And money. Yeah,
of course. Yeah. So you said there's a digital health cohort. There's a life science cohort. What else you got?
There's digital health track and life science.
And life science track.
Yeah. So oncology-focused innovation in those spaces. There are like specific criteria.
So, all right, we're here at Health. Health is showy. It is splashy. It is
everything that I am.
It is very much your personality.
Yeah.
You're, you know, not at all humble.
Finally feel seen and heard at home.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't look at all uncomfortable walking through a conference like this, But I mean, it's designed to be showy. It's designed for new startup companies to go attract investment, show off the new latest shiny thing or shiny hammer, like we might call it, right? What is a conference like this missing?
You know, it's got like everything. I would say it's not even specific to health. I think in general, it's like the realists what sometimes gets missed. Like I walk through here, it's amazing. And I always make a joke, like I'm a risk-averse entrepreneur. I like to work with startups. Or like companies, because like it's much more comfortable to work with house money, right? Mm-hmm. So I have so much respect for CEOs and startup founders and all of those things. And I think, you know, there's so much promise and positivity, but like I walk around here and it makes you realize like it is a vast landscape and a crowded landscape. And it is not easy.
Yeah. There's more pavilions here than my day camp.
Even the companies that are outside the pavilions, like it is tough. So I don't know how you capture that or make an event better, but like for me,
I think personally, you just put them all in a big giant ring and just throw down some weapons and whoever comes out gets investment.
what is that?
Like Hunger Games.
The reaping, right?
Health tech purge.
That might be next year at Health. They might steal that idea. They have pickleball.
They give it to them for free. Listen.
Puppy dogs.
They always have the puppy dogs. I played pickleball for the first time today on that court. I did.
I walked by there and I was like, who's playing pickleball? I wish I would have seen that.
This guy.
I believe it.
I have another slot tomorrow if you want to join in.
Take a pass, I think.
No, it's a good workout. Wait, you actually play pickleball?
I played like 3 times.
Really? Yeah. You would not have struck me as like a pickleball kind of guy.
I don't know what, that means.
What is a pickleball player?
Yeah, totally.
That's great. So I interrupted you, right? So we're not going to do health tech Hunger Games.
I mean, I think it's always health tech Hunger Games. Like realistically, you know, like the survival rate is very difficult for startups. And
so what's your advice to startups and founders that are out here to stand out or to make a name for themselves?
Part of it's luck, part of it's team. This is like so stupid and basic, but like make sure that you're actually solving a problem that exists. But it's not just that. And then see if someone else is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone else is doing it, make sure that you're doing it in a better and different way.
Mm-hmm.
So like that, again, it sounds so basic, but I ran into a company yesterday and
you don't need to name names.
Don't name names. I actually don't remember the name, but like, I'm not even going to name Burn. It's not a burn. I'm not going to name specifics, but you know, they start telling me the premise. And first thing that comes to my head is like, you know, I have a lot of respect for someone that's really putting that out there. And,
but I've seen 5 of you
in a crowded market.
Yeah.
Right? And like, what I want to know is how are you different?
Yeah.
How are you different than those competitors? You know? Don't just tell me you have some amazing AI algorithm.
And that's the other thing. A lot of what is out there is, and this is no offense to any of the founders that are out there that are bringing their stuff here.
I've worked with him a long time. He means offense.
I do not. I mean, no offense whatsoever. But like, because I've seen it, I've been on the other side now and I see it, right? There's a lot of smoke and mirrors. Again, I'm not assigning blame or anything bad of that.
But to be fair, there are companies that have raised lots of money
on clear smoke and mirrors.
Lots of money on smoke and mirrors. So you could see why there's been some precedent set to dream big, project that things are maybe different than they are.
Sure.
Sometimes it works.
Sure. I mean, sometimes it works out. Sometimes you end up like an Aura with an $11 billion valuation. Like, that's insane.
It's insane
money. Yeah. Makes me want to put a ring on it.
I don't think it's on the forefinger.
Bro, what is that? Why on the forefinger? Like, that's not even fashionable.
I mean, I couldn't tell you that. I'm not a big jewelry guy.
All right. So I'm a founder. I'm down here. It's my first health. I'm in a pavilion, right?
Okay. Pavilions are great.
They are great. Yeah. I agree. I love walking to the pavilions.
Honestly, most of my time is spent like hanging out in pavilions.
And just seeing the new tech, seeing what's out there. Talking to
the founders.
If it's my first time as a founder down here, what should I make sure that I do while I'm here?
Your first time as a founder, I mean, it's probably so overwhelming. I mean, I think part of it is thoughtful prep ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it's too late. I'm already down here.
If you're hearing this now, it's too late. You already dropped the ball. No, but I do think it's in preparation. So coming in goes back to the same conversations before. What are the outcomes that you want to get?
Yeah.
Out? And then being very, very direct, because for startups, this is a big investment.
Yeah.
You know, the ticket, yes, there's startup prices, but just coming to Vegas, all that stuff, and time and money are the most valuable things to a startup. So you've made a major decision coming here. So preparing and figuring that out, is it you want to attract investors? Are you trying to make some strategic partnerships or just general networking, customer acquisition? I mean, there's so many
Are you coming here for customer acquisition, though? I mean, this doesn't seem like the kind of conference to, like, that seems more like a Vive
true.
Especially if your customer is provider organizations.
Do you know what's funny? I think you just made me realize the difference between health and Vive.
Really?
So that makes sense. Like, this is
startups and investment coming together. Vive is, Vive brings in the providers.
I know that intuitively, but hearing you that loud.
I taught Adam something.
It's not a first.
I feel powerful.
Second time.
That's fair. Okay. So what I'm hearing you say is, right, make sure you have a plan when you're coming down here. Don't just wing it just don't come down here to come down here.
For any, no matter what enterprise size. Like when I was at Amazon,
you had a plan.
Yeah. That's a big company investment. So I think any company of size, this is an investment you're making with your time, money, people, and you should maximize it, figure out what that looks like.
So you mentioned a couple of different like key goals that a company might come down here with, right? So I'm coming down here, I'm trying to work the investment angle, or I'm trying to do some building awareness, maybe I'm launching, et cetera. Is there a danger in trying to do too much? I mean, I might have a plan to do all these things, but is there just a danger in doing too much?
There's always a danger too much, especially when you're resource limited. So I think if you're an early stage startup coming, you can have more than one focus, right? But if you're like trying to do it all, it's tough.
Yeah.
This place is overwhelming.
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. So many, and there's so many companies here. All right, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's stop talking about like founderism.
Talk about you?
No, please. No, we're not going to talk about
your innovation career?
No, my innovation career is still innovating. I want to talk about technology. I want to talk about actual technology.
Okay.
We're seeing, you know, the big thing on a lot of people's lips is agentic AI. There's some really great stuff being done in diagnostics. Obviously, AI is on everybody's lips and AI can mean everything to everybody. Where do you see the most innovation? Where are you excited looking at in terms of technology? I mean, you've seen it all.
You know, at my core, you were there. Like, I got my start in integrating technology into clinical workflows.
Right.
So anytime that I can see tech that's integrating into the frontline delivery of care, that gets me excited. And I think there's a lot really, really interesting tech that's making things better for patients, making things better for clinicians, making things better for operations that really has a significant impact for patients, which sometimes is invisible.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue that's a good thing. And, you know, you're getting people that are way more, hopefully, they're more present delivering care.
Well, that's the idea, right? And we've talked about that on the podcast before, where the technology should fade into the background, right? That's why I love the concepts around ambient technology, right? Well, because that's where it's at, right? And when I can go into my doctor's office and have my doctor look me in the eye and have a conversation with me and not typing in, you know, hunting and pecking into a computer screen, that's really important to me.
Yeah.
And it makes that moment, that clinical moment, so much more intimate and so much more meaningful.
I was very lucky when I worked in the ER clinically, I had a scribe with me at all times. So
this guy right here.
So it was great but you know what? I can walk in the room and just talk to the patient, talk to the kid, talk to the family, and just be present right from the start, knowing that it was all captured.
Yeah, right.
And
can I flip the script on that?
Sure,
like, because I've been on the receiving side of a doctor scribe encounter.
Yeah.
I hated it.
Well, okay. So you have to like have every doc works differently with a scribe.
Mm.
So I've been in the encounters with like, all right, can you write down blah, which by the way, you might as well be at a computer.
Right.
So I actually would work with this. I had a very like organic visit. I would just do my thing.
Yeah.
And I would ahead of time kind of maybe prep them for a couple of things just to take note of, or when I walked out of the room.
Right. Make sure you get this, that, the other thing.
By the time I'm walking back to the workstation, it's
right.
So, and it just makes it a free-flowing conversation.
It's still very awkward, especially when you're talking about some very intimate things with a PCP that you may not want some random third-party intern to hear. But anyway.
A third party is listening with ambient.
Dude, it's not human, you know?
This is like probably a whole nother episode, like an existential human versus AI listening.
Yes, I love
this. I would argue that AI is doing way more with that conversation than
a human ever would.
23-year-old.
Yeah, who's gonna forget it when he goes drinking at the end of the day? Yeah. Because he had to work with you.
I mean, it's happened.
Well, listen, Adam, thank you so much for spending some time with us here at Tech to the Limit. I really appreciate it. Listeners, make sure that you check out Vertex Health and follow Dr. Adam Glasper on LinkedIn. He's an amazing guy, a good friend.
Okay. I am a good friend.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks. See y'all.
Well, welcome back, listeners, from a fantastic interview with Dr. Glasifer. I learned how to say that on the break. I just love this model that we have. And we are excited to bring you yet another bonus interview within the bonus episode of season 3. Just bonus, bonus, bonus. Okay. So the final interview that you got, Elliot, at Health in the booth with Glitter was Zachary Tan and Jeff Dunkel from Optane Health. Damn, that's hard to say. You guys might want to think about that one. No, just kidding. Tell us, what did you learn from Zach and Jeff?
So first of all, these guys are a trip. Zach is Australian. So he brings this kind of fun,
sexy accent.
Totally. But these guys are right there in our vibe. They know that health tech can be hard, but it can also be fun. And they've really developed a cool product, really formulating the vision of artificial intelligence use in diagnostics pushed further upstream in care to the PCP office in a way that is integrated into clinician workflows. Super cool guys. So key things to look out for in this interview, what they're doing with a retinal scan. You'll actually see me get a retinal scan in real time in this interview, which was really incredible. I was very nervous as to what it was going to say about me. I'm healthy.
Yay!
It is the only place in the body where clinicians can directly see blood vessels, which I think is really cool. And it ends up being an early indicator for cardiovascular, neurological, and metabolic disease, you know, as we know, diabetic retinopathy there. So look out for that. It's a great early diagnostic tool. The next thing about it is it detects the risk in under a minute with like no real impact to the patient except for seeing a bright light while they're, looking into these binocular looking things. So no dilation, right? So the patient experience, diminishes. You think about SDOH health. Well, now I need to find somebody to get me a ride to this when I need to be dilated typically for this kind of scan.
Right.
I don't need that anymore, right? So there's all kinds of benefit to this when you think about this kind of early diagnostic technology. Jeff had a great kind of rule. It's a three-piece rule. So any new tech, in order to be successful, it's got to add clinical value, financial ROI, and minimal workflow friction.
Yes.
That last one, right?
Right.
And so I think they really kind of hit the nail on the head with this particular product. So the other thing is they've completely vertically integrated the camera, the AI, and the service delivery, which makes adoption for their users completely turnkey. And then lastly, we had this great conversation around ethics and consent and anxiety. Hmm. When patients learn about hidden risks. We talked about this a little bit in our last podcast episode of the season. Do I really want to know everything that's going on in my body?
Yeah. With Dr. Rue from Microsoft. Yeah.
I think that there's room for this kind of technology to completely redefine prevention's emotional landscape.
That sounds like a fascinating conversation. And I'm going to just stop talking and let's bring it to our listeners.
Awesome. Roll the clip. Hey, Tech It to the Limit listeners, I'm back with another interview here at the health conference. So grateful to have with us today people that are truly changing the way people see the future of healthcare, no pun intended. We have with us today Dr. Zachary Tan and Jeff Dunkel from Optane Health. Zach is a physician scientist, venture builder, Forbes 30 under 30. He's worn more hats than a startup founder at Demo Day, from clinician to sportsman scholar, a partner at Aegis Ventures, and now he's leading the charge for AI-powered retinal screening into every corner of care. No dilation drops required, right?
So left him behind in clinic.
And alongside Zach is Jeff Dunkel. He's the CEO of Optane Health. He's a leader who spent his career turning moonshot medtech ideas into market-ready solutions with more than two decades of digital health, medical devices, and enterprise strategy. Jeff's guided everything from startups to Fortune 500s through the maze of regulation, reimbursement, and real-world adoption. So now at Optane, you're leading the charge to bring AI-powered retinal screening to the front of care, which is really revolutionizing early detection, which is so awesome. So folks, grab your ophthalmoscopes and it's time to see what the future of preventative healthcare really looks like. Both of you, thank you so much for joining us here on Tech It to the Limit.
Hey, thanks for having us. This is great. It's an absolute pleasure.
Awesome. Well, let's kind of jump right in. So Optane's core premise rests on the idea that the eye isn't just some organ in your head. It's like it's a diagnostic sensor for the entire body. So what does that mean for healthcare when ophthalmology becomes primary care?
Yeah, really quickly, the retina is an incredibly unique tissue. It's the only part of your body we can directly see blood vessels, and it's effectively an extension of your brain. Turns out if I have high blood pressure, if I smoke, then that impacts the blood vessels around my heart. the blood vessels in the back of my eye are a really sensitive barometer. So what's happening across my body? Same in my brain. You know, it's just an incredible window to the whole body. And there's this new science, oculomics, which is all around how do we use the eye as a window to the body for not only eye diseases, but whole body diseases as well.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. So when you talk about oculomics, what new categories of care do you see this sort of unlocking?
Think about biomarkers. Mm-hmm. You have to start thinking first about what that links to systemically mm-hmm. and stop thinking about the eye as an organ and more of as a predictor mm-hmm. of what's going on in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we know that through blood vessels, through hypertension, through neurological disorders, and through sensory, we can see certainly any diseases associated with the eye. But then cardiovascular disease, neurological disorders.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can probably get into chronic kidney disease. So it's a pretty wide open field. And we're very fortunate. We have some of the world's best researchers on our team helping to maintain us as the tip of the spear for the next generation of screening testing.
And what I really love about the eye, just jumping in, is we can image the eye.
Yeah.
We can just use photography. Mm-hmm. We've created a robotic camera, which does it really quickly.
Uh-huh.
I don't need a needle. I don't need radiation. And we can put it in the front line to use it as a really portal to the body.
So I'm a little nervous. Should I try it out?
Absolutely.
Should I find out? I'm a little scared of what I might find out about myself. So, all right, what do I do?
I will demo.
Oh my gosh.
So you're going to hold this like a pair of binoculars. Okay. This fits like a scuba mask.
Alrighty.
And then all I'm going to hit.
I'm just keeping my eyes open.
Keep your eyes open.
Stare at the flashing cross and try not to blink. Beginning the left eye.
So the camera's going to direct everything that's happening.
Stare at the flashing cross.
You've got beautiful pupils.
Thank you.
And I'm sure you get that all the time.
No, I do. Wow.
So the process you're going through normally requires dilation. It normally requires you sitting in a waiting room. You've got some wonderful imaging and tiger striping.
You have a beautiful retina, Ellie.
Thank you.
Show you your eyes in just a second.
These guys are so flattering.
Do not blink.
Sorry.
There you go. That's it. That's it.
Wow, that's it?
That's it.
That's fascinating. So aside from my beautiful retinas, which
you know,
I get all the time, what else are you able to see from that? Or I assume you're running it through an algorithm, right? Mm-hmm. So is that spitting out something directly to the clinician that's saying, you know, here are all the risk factors that we're seeing, you know, I assume, are you doing true diagnosis or are you doing a referral to specialty?
It's really screening. You know, we're really putting this into the front line. And one of the first challenges we're trying to solve is for a condition called diabetic retinopathy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most common cause of blindness in America. 15% of adult Americans have diabetes, and they all require screening for this disease once per year.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is it's really hard to get screened today. You have to go see an ophthalmologist, an optometrist, to be real barriers to care.
Mm-hmm.
Can we bring this technology to the front line mm-hmm. so that we go meet with patients where they are? So it's screening for diseases like diabetic retinopathy, but also other conditions like heart disease and stroke.
Sure.
And flagging most patients at the front line who really would benefit from a downstream care.
Yeah.
You want some good news?
Yeah, I do want some good news. Wow. Lot of green on that dashboard right there.
So you are low risk for both eyes for glaucoma, no diabetic retinopathy, and negative or early on age-related macular degeneration.
That's fantastic.
Further, we're looking at your cardiovascular risk and your cardiovascular health. So you're projecting at a 2.2 absolute cardiovascular risk. You work out?
Every day.
Excellent. It shows in your vessels.
Vessels don't lie.
I've got good vessels.
You've got great vessels. So we can.
One of my best features.
It's looking inside your eye. You know, that's something good for your dating profile.
I'm going to put it on my Hinge profile.
That sounds great. We'll send this to you.
That's very cool.
So this is your cardiovascular risk. So we were talking earlier about our ability to.
You know, what's interesting is I'm a former smoker.
Hmm?
So I spent a decade smoking and
recommend that.
No, I don't recommend that at all. Right. And quitting smoking was one of the hardest things I ever did. Hmm. I'm very glad that I did it, but I've always been concerned about what permanent damage I have done and how elevated is my risk factors, you know, for the rest of my life, considering those poor decisions I made when I was younger.
Well,
right.
So that's magical. You know, we're you know, actually looking at your blood vessels, which are, you know, so sensitive to the blood vessels around your body. So this isn't a calculator. You didn't need a needle or radiation for this. Within a minute, you can actually tell, hey, look, you know, these are how your vessels look.
Yeah.
And this is your cardiovascular health.
That's so cool.
And this is trained to the World Health Organization standard.
Yeah.
Diagnostics.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Awesome. That is really cool. So I want to switch gears a little bit and away from the tech and talk about some tactical stuff, right? Because scaling precision imaging into a frontline care is notoriously hard, right? You've got workflows, reimbursement, human behavior, all of those things impact adoption. So what have you learned in your work here to help breakthroughs pilots into like use, you know, and adoption?
I'm going to tell you, what I learned wasn't here. What I learned was a brief stint of my life where I left the diagnostics and med tech space and actually went and ran clinics. One of the hardest jobs I've ever had. And what I learned there is if you want to be successful on this side, what you have to provide is very simple. Give me clinical care that has an output that I don't currently have. Create a fiscal return that I'm not currently getting. And occupy no more than 2 minutes of my total staff time or 1 minute of my doctor's time. That's it. And so I think where we've seen...
Those are really nice, clean rules.
Right.
Right. The rules of the game to play.
My team probably gets tired of hearing it because I open every meeting by saying, these are the things we're going to do.
Right.
And I think what we have done right is that we've approached this screening platform, making sure that we check the box on the rules. So when we walk in, we're having a conversation at a business level, we're having a conversation at a clinical level, and we're having a conversation at a utility level that match the needs of everyone that's involved in the process. And I think that's fundamentally where all of our competitors that have been in the space for a longer period of time than us, I think it's where they failed. And I think it's why we're growing so rapidly in market share. I think it's why we had 7 investors from health systems in our last A round. I think people have been waiting for a solution.
I just think
we were very fortunate to have an opportunity to slide and be the ones to provide it.
Yeah, very cool.
And just double clicking a little bit on what Jeff is saying, it comes down as well to the product, you know, to get that adoption, that real durable adoption. And my mum's a PCP. I know how much we ask of our PCPs to do every year. It has to be fast. I mean, product has to be easy to use. And to do that, you have to have the camera, the AI, I mean, tele-retina services all under one roof, vertically integrated. Only in that way is it easy enough to use and get
this. And make it turnkey enough for a PCP to actually use.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're keeping up on time here, but I wanted to ask a kind of question, sort of forward-looking, again, no pun intended. So if you get into these spaces where...
There's so many good eye puns.
I know. It really is. You see what I did there?
Gazing
through.
When AI can see disease before we even start to feel it, you know, and something like this where you might be exposing patients to risks they didn't know they had or were even considering, how does that make us rethink consent, responsibility, and anxiety within preventative medicine? How much do people really want to know the future of their health?
I think everyone wants to know. And I think we have an obligation to try to find out, right? We were talking earlier on our walk into this room about our parents, right? And what is that generation doing? And, you know, they're intoxicated with the things that can happen on an iPhone. I think technology has shifted that even generations that we previously thought would not be interested in technology are now adopting it at a regular basis. So first of all, I don't think we're making a major leap. I don't think that anyone thinks that this is so far science fiction, that Star Trek. I think people know that it's here. And then number two, I think ethically, if you know that there's a disease state and the disease states that we predict are treatable, right? And it's a lower cost and it's a lower lift to treat when you catch early. I think that screening is an obligation that should be frontline across the board. I just think that's the right thing to do morally and ethically. I want to know, right? I think eventually we evolve into a, we screen genetically when we're kids and we find out what our downstream diseases are. We're not there yet. But for now, this is a really big step.
Yeah, I agree. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on Tech to the Limit. This product is amazing. I'm really looking forward to adding this to my Tinder profile, which is a complete joke. I'm a married man. That's not on Tinder, but I'm sure my husband will want to take a look at this as well. So appreciate you guys being here.
At the very least, you can justify eating a steak.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, red meat for dinner tonight.
That's right.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
This episode is brought to you by MedFetch, the agentic AI service dedicated to retrieving the prescriptions patients abandon like forgotten New Year's resolutions. Because let's be honest, unfilled prescriptions aren't a clinical issue. They're a human nature issue. MedFetch fixes this with a patented three-step approach. Step one, a soft nudge reminding you that your medication is ready. Step two, a firmer nudge with the emotional weight of a disappointed favorite aunt. And step three, a virtual pharmacist who pops up and asks, hey, are we really doing this again? With MedFetch, abandoned prescriptions drop by 98% on guilt alone. The other 2% are people who still fax things on purpose, and no softwares can fix that. Tech of the Limit listeners get a free month of MedFetch Pro, which includes refill prescriptions, adherence nudges calibrated to your personal guilt tolerance, and priority access to their new Don't Make Me Come Over There Again reminder. Just go to medfetch.health/limit and enter the promo code SPICYNUGGET to activate your free month. MedFetch, because your meds are ready, and honestly, they deserve better.
Well, that's a wrap on our Health 2025 FOMO coverage, a whirlwind of glitter, bots, brains.
So, like, health is the Vegas of health tech. So we definitely saw the jackpots.
They'll all stop by the booth, obviously.
And you know, the slot machine solutions might still need a few more spins out there on the show floor.
Right.
There's some kind of metaphor there, right?
I feel like we
got the winners on our show. They were
fighting each other to get to the booth. I mean, you have scars to prove it. Right? You're like, that's a bit of a stretch. Anyway, listeners, thank you for tuning in for the third season of Tech It to the Limit. Whether you're coding, you're commuting, or you're just pretending to understand blockchain in a board meeting, we just want to thank you for being our listeners. We could not do this show without you. And we definitely, like, 20% of it is selfish. Like, we love what we do, but the other 80% is for our fans, you know? Like, we're like Swifties, you know, doing it for the fans.
Tom.
Yeah. Anyway, Elliot, what can they look forward to next spring?
So we'll be back next season for season four. We'll have new guests, fresh spicy nugs, some good wise nugs coming your way, and probably the same amount, if not a tad bit more, of the questionable wordplay that you know and love here at Tech to the Limit.
As long as it remains questionable and wordplay only. Maybe some cosplay, okay? I mean, we do like to dress up. In the meantime, listeners, you can catch up on vintage, perfectly aged episodes of Tech It to the Limit wherever you get your pods. You can stream them on techittothelimit.fun, and we invite you to follow us on LinkedIn for behind-the-scenes PG-13 content and mildly professional humor. And, you know, Elliot, you know all about the algorithms. What do they got to do to make sure that we get boosted?
Well, aside from hitting that follow button on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your pods, head over to our YouTube channel and smash that subscribe button there.
Smash it.
And do us a favor. Feed the algorithm. Feed it by rating us and leaving us a comment. Those 5 stars and those comments get SEO generated, and they help us reach more people, and it makes the algorithm think that we're trustworthy.
It's so random. I want to be fed to an SEO beast, and I want an algorithm to think I'm trustworthy. Then I will have made it in life. You know, right. Screw Fulpes professorship. Anyway, Elliot.
You want to send us off with our final health tech haiku of the season?
Wait, it's my honor? I get to do this? Oh my gosh. Oh, okay. I'm not prepared. Okay. I sure hope ChatGPT wrote us a good one this week. All right, here we go. Bots book, docs exhale, the hum of care, soft and unseen, health lights fade to calm.
Poetic.
So poetic.
Listeners, we'll see you next season. Thanks for joining us on Tech It to the Limit.
See you next time.
See you next time.
See you next time.
Tech It to the Limit is produced by Sarah Harper
and Elliot Wilson in consultation with ChatGPT.
Because they are masochists and also don't have any sponsors.
Yet. Music was composed by the world-famous court minstrel Evan O'Donovan.
To consume more hilarious and informative content about digital transformation in healthcare, visit us online at techittothelimit.fun.
And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and across the event horizon. See you next time on
Tech It to the Limit.